Network. This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. After failing to attract large numbers of foreign peacekeepers in Iraq, the Pentagon is drawing up plans to rotate in as many as 30,000 more reservists early next year, despite growing worries in Congress about strains on the force. These troops would join 15,000 Army National Guard troops already in line to go into Iraq on a year-long rotation to replace U.S. troops now in Iraq. U.S. Marines may also be sent into Iraq by February to ease the burden on Army forces. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld refused to discuss how many more reservists might be needed next year, saying no final decisions had been made. But Rumsfeld raised the possibility that up to 10,000 troops for Iraq offered by Turkey might never go due to resistance by the Iraqi Governing Council, meaning that U.S. forces might be needed in their place. The Pentagon disclosed that more than a dozen American troops haven't returned to duty after getting a vacation from Iraq, but dismissed suggestions that there is any significant AWOL problem. 16 troops failed to show up at airports in Baltimore and Germany for return flights to the Persian Gulf region. None has been declared absent without leave as officials try to sort out the cases. To give troops some relief from long deployments in Iraq, the Pentagon started giving two-week leaves in the longest R&R program since the Vietnam War. But in the first 5 days of return flights starting August 12th, 28 people didn't show up. It was later learned that 20 had permission or some other reason. The other 8 were unaccounted for, as were 8 who also missed flights in the past 5 days. North Korea rejected President Bush's offer of a written pledge not to attack in exchange for agreeing to scrap its nuclear program, saying it would settle for nothing less than a formal non-aggression treaty that would legally bind the United States not to launch a preemptive strike. Bush kept open an offer for a written pledge in which the U.S., China, Japan, South Korea, and Russia would assure that North Korea would not be attacked, but North Korean radio said the offer was a laughing matter not worth considering. More IE America Network news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A 25-year-old Berlin, Germany woman was so enraged over another Saturday night of boring television programs and dull reruns, she hurled her TV set out the window of her fifth-floor apartment. "There was nothing decent on, so I just threw the thing out the window," the woman told Bild newspaper. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
When George W. was governor of our state, we Texans learned firsthand of a deep anti-democratic flaw in his makeup. He abhors dissent and is totally dismissive not only of dissenters, but also of the people's right to dissent. As governor, as presidential candidate, and now as president, Bush's unconscionable, and I think unconstitutional, disrespect of our fundamental right to question authority and confront power has surfaced again and again in an alarming Bush doctrine of contained dissent. What this amounts to is an imperious decision that any and all protesters must literally be corralled, kept in protest pens well beyond the sight and sound of His Eminence and of the media. in Texas, Governor Bush's security police suddenly swept down on a group of peaceful picketers who were on the public sidewalk in front of the governor's mansion, a sidewalk that historically has been the site of protest. At this time, George was launching his presidential run, and he simply didn't want these dissenters to his environmental policies getting between him and the TV cameras. So he had the state police move them to a designated protest zone in a faraway parking lot. At the Republican presidential nominating convention in Philadelphia in 2000, candidate Bush created a fenced-in, out-of-sight protest zone that would only hold a few hundred people at a time. And, as president, his autocratic games continue. For example, last year at the Columbia, South Carolina airport, a protester with a No War for Oil sign stood in an area where Bush supporters stood. The protester was ordered to move a half a mile away. He refused, so Bush's police arrested him. This is Jim Hightower saying, four groups have now sued the Secret Service for systematically shutting out the people's protest. To learn more, call the American Civil Liberties Union, 215-923-4357.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There was a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, also Sirius Satellites, satellite radio system stream 145, and broadcasting around the world on various web stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and of course on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. And many spots in between. Pakistan and Saudi Arabia in secret nuke pact. The Washington Times reports today. Today, by the way, being day 100 in the freedom of Karl Rove. 100 days since Valerie Plame got outed. He's still walking around loose. What has the Justice Department done? Well, they're not telling us. Day 254 of the search for weapons of mass distraction. Day 765 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of our president, Osama bin Laden. Anyhow, on this day, the Washington Times... Oh, and by the way, don't let me forget to mention, if you want to drop into our chat room, where you will find the most intelligent, articulate, and erudite conversations on the entire Internet during the 3 hours that this program is on the air, go to TomHartman.com and click the chat button. It'll take you into a CompuServe forum. Click the chat button there, and boom, you are there. Pakistan and Saudi Arabia in secret nuke pact. This is mind-boggling. Pakistan, I have to confess, here I am quoting from a newspaper owned by Reverend Moon, and yet thinking that maybe there's some credibility to this. I guess it's possible. Pakistan and Saudi Arabia have concluded a secret agreement on nuclear cooperation, says an article by Arnaud de Bourgeois, Pakistan-Saudi Arabian secret nuke pact, today's Washington Times, that will provide the Saudis with nuclear weapons technology in exchange for cheap oil. We're looking in this hour at the fruit of George W. Bush's war on terrorism. See, in my opinion, you can't have a war on an abstraction. Wars on terrorism are just as useless and ineffective as wars on drugs or wars on illiteracy or wars on poverty.
You can have a policy. You can proceed to do something. You can have a plan. Wars are something nations declare against each other. But we have this all this rhetoric. This rhetoric I saw a piece over the weekend or over the last few days about, I don't remember where, about George Bush using the rhetoric of the hunt. The rhetoric of the hunter. Smoke them out. Track them down. Hunt them down. And the rhetoric of the hunt being the frame that is being used to portray George W. as the Clint Eastwood hero for America. We all have this. Most Americans, particularly those who grew up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, early 70s, or before, when there were still Westerns on TV and Western movies and things, they have this kind of archetypal thing. And then, of course, Star Wars and Star Trek, for that matter, although not quite so much, but certainly Star Wars and the movies that have followed reinvent that. I mean, they're basically just Westerns in outer space. So there's this notion of the hunter, the revenge maker, as the one who will correct the ills of society, who will save the day, who will bring us all back to that idyllic time and place. Except this guy's not suggesting he's going to take us back. We've got this permanent terror alert, different colors, and the Department of Homeland Security. Like terror has become a big business. There's been a number of articles in the international press wondering why George W. Bush went to this economic summit in Southeast Asia to meet with all these leaders about economic issues, and all he wanted to talk about was the war on terrorism. Well, the reason is pretty simple and pretty straightforward. He's a one-trick pony. He's got this one thing, as he said to Mitch Daniels, and he tells Republican fundraiser audiences as a joke, and always gets a good laugh from it. When he was elected there, you know, he was facing three big problems. People didn't think he was a legitimate president because he didn't get a majority. The economy was beginning to go soft. And he didn't have a strong mandate in Congress. And he didn't have the Congress behind him. He didn't have the people behind him. And the economy was a threat. And then 9/11 happened. And as he said to Mitch Daniels, hit the trifecta. And indeed. So thus we have this war. So what are the consequences of this? Well, this is one. Countries around the world are realizing that if you have nuclear weapons, the USA will treat you very kindly. Here we are making offers to North Korea now. You know, the president goes all the way to Southeast Asia and makes an offer, and North Korea throws it back at it. It throws it back at it. It is to be laughable, they say. So Saudi Arabia, 200, an entourage of 200 members of the ruling elite of Saudi Arabia, made a 26-hour state visit to Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, last weekend. It was led by Crown Prince Abdullah bin Abdulaziz, Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler. Keep in mind, the king is kind of out of it. He had a stroke, and he's just there waiting for him to die. And they flew across the Arabian Sea with an entourage of 200, including Foreign Minister Prince Saud al-Faisal and several cabinet ministers. The one guy who was excluded from this is the one guy in the Saudi hierarchy who is, on the one hand, considered American, pro-American, and this is Aziz al-Saud, and on the other hand is also next in line to the throne after the crown prince. So he's like the number three guy. No, he'll be the number two guy when the old king kicks off. The pro-American guy was not invited. And Pakistan is estimated to have between 35 and 60 nuclear weapons. Keep in mind, the Saudis are Sunni Muslims. You know the Sunni triangle that they're having all the problems with in Iraq? And the Iranians, like the Muslims in South Iraq, are Shiites. And the Iranians now, it appears, are pursuing a nuclear weapons path. And, of course, this has not just us concerned and the others in the region, but it has the Saudis concerned because they're the competing, they're the Sunnis. And so there, and then on the other, and then on, in addition to that, you've got the situation where Israel and India have an open arms agreement, where Israel will use its nuclear inventory, between 200 and 400 nuclear weapons, to defend India if it's attacked by Pakistan. So it's like the battle lines are being drawn. And all of this comes as a result of the bellicose rhetoric of this administration and their incredible faux pas. This general that we had here last week, Boynton, running around saying that this is a war against Satan. It's a war on behalf of the Judeo-Christian people of the world against evil. And then you've got Saudi officials that are freaked out because back last year there was a U.S. Defense Policy Board meeting in which this guy gets up and does a 16-slide PowerPoint presentation talking about, and this was in, this is like on the New York Times. I mean, this was a big story. This guy doing the Defense Policy Board doing a 16-slide PowerPoint presentation about, to quote the Washington Times, why and how the United States should seize and occupy oil fields in Saudi Arabia's eastern province. So we have this problem. Another fruit of the occupation, another fruit of the war, is the whole thing that's happening with our energy policies, the energy plan. I'm going to get into that in some more detail in the next hour. We're going to talk about Howard Dean has one out. And also just the whole, and Halliburton in Iraq. First, just a quick clip here on George W. Bush's energy plan.
I have sent you a comprehensive energy plan to devastate communities, kill wildlife, and burn away millions of acres of treasured forests.
Yeah, we've figured that out. And so several members of Congress are getting quite upset about what's going on. The situation with Halliburton now in the Middle East is just, it's starting to blow up. This is one of the reasons why I'm convinced that George W. is going to dump Dick Cheney and go with Rudy Giuliani in 2004. But, for example, here's Representative Henry Waxman, Congressman Henry Waxman, talking about the secrecy around how these deals and just all this stuff here. Very interesting comment.
Unfortunately, the root cause of the problem is the administration's insistence on virtual secrecy in the way they're handling these contracts and the way they're spending the taxpayers' dollars.
The contracts being the contracts to rebuild Iraq, to pump the oil, to do pretty much everything. You know, it's just extraordinary.
These abuses would not continue if the administration were forced to disclose the details of these sweetheart arrangements.
And therefore, Congressman Waxman and others are suggesting that just that happen.
And that's why I'm going to support amendments on the House floor to inject transparency into the contracting process. And on top of this, there's virtually no congressional oversight, which means there's no accountability. If we at least had some hearings on this subject, we could put pressure on the companies to cut wasteful spending. Millions of Americans want to help Iraqis, but they don't want to be fleeced. And based on the information we're getting, American taxpayers are getting fleeced.
And that's not a good thing. It's interesting. I've mentioned to you, I'm working on finishing up this next book of mine. It's a book on the history of democracy in the United States. And in the course of writing it, I interviewed this morning a professor in England at Cambridge University who is involved in research about democracy among animals. And it illustrates why transparency is so important. Because, well, I'll tell you about it right after this break, but it's really quite amazing what animals do, how democracy plays out in the animal kingdom, how different that is from how it plays out in the human world, and what that means for us. This is Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Dave.
Hey there.
Dave has a problem.
Maybe you have the problem understanding that we can be under attack at any time.
Dave suffers from TMRWM, otherwise known as too much or right wing amidiitis. Or something like that.
The alarm's at orange now. What does that mean? Where's my chart?
But Dave's not alone.
Another Saddam tape. He's still alive.
There are millions of Americans all over the United States suffering from TMRWM.
Oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there. Somewhere. They'll find them.
Symptoms of TMRWM include insomnia, irritability, suspecting more than 3 people a day of being a terrorist.
That guy right there looks like one. So does this kid. You're not fooling me, buddy.
And much, much more. But there is a cure.
There is?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio weekdays on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. Get more information at ieamericaradio.com. Let's save our country one American at a time.
Thank you, IE America.
Let go of me, Dave.
Sorry.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Before I get into this stuff about democracy and then get back to Halliburton and how these two intersect, why it's so important to understand both. I just want to take a moment and pass out an award. This is where our We Caught You Doing Something Right award, operating on the principle that catching people doing things right is much more important than catching people doing things wrong, and it's far more motivating. And so we would like to have a Caught You Doing Something Right award here today. And our Caught You Doing Something Right award for today is for Ohio State Senator Eric Fingerhut, candidate for the United States Senate. Congressman Senator Fingerhut had put into, there was a law in Ohio that was being considered that would, that had to do with the investigations and of the Department of Health and this sort of thing. I don't want to get into the whole details of it, but it was opposed by consumer, environmental, and media groups. And because the bill said residents can receive information during an investigation if it is, quote, summary, statistical, or aggregate in form and does not identify a person, end quote. And it turns out that in Ohio, as in every other state in the United States, the word person includes, doesn't include government, doesn't include unions, doesn't include churches, but it does include for-profit corporations. So Senator Fingerhut changed the word from person to individual, so it would only apply to human beings. Unfortunately, the Senate, by a 19-14 vote, tabled the amendment, so he was not ultimately successful in this, as far as I can tell from the information I have, but I think it's wonderful. It's a great start. It's a good try. It's raising consciousness about the issue, and it would have satisfied the consumer groups, because what they wanted was they didn't want a bill that was going to allow corporations to hide behind secrecy. But they did want to offer privacy to individuals. I mean, it's just perfectly normal. So State Senator Eric Fingerhut, who is running for the United States Senate, congratulations and thanks for a great job done. So back to democracy. I was talking with T.J. Roper, the School of Biological Sciences, I said Cambridge, University of Sussex in Brighton, England. And he said that They had done this research, and I have the original paper here that was published in Nature magazine. And they had done this research where they asked the question, could it be that animals actually make decisions in a democratic way? See, the prevailing myth in Western civilization, and probably in Eastern and whatever you want to call it, the prevailing myth of civilization has been, since essentially for about 7,000 years, since Gilgamesh first rose up in Sumeria in Iraq and created the first modern, what we would call modern nation state, the myth has been that humans are designed, like all other animals, to be ruled by the most powerful. We look out at animals and we say, ah, there's an alpha male with that herd, or these wolves, they have an alpha female. And different species have different, you know, sometimes it's a male, sometimes it's female, different criteria. But you know, there's an alpha animal. And we go, ah, that must be the king. And so our notion of hierarchy has been that kings and kingdoms are the way things should be. Well, it turns out that not only is that not true for humans, that this little 7,000-year experiment of kingdoms and aristocracy and plutocracy and despotism is not normal for humans. Instead, for 200,000 years, people living tribally have actually lived democratically. They were some of the greatest mentors for Jefferson and Franklin and James Madison and the other founders and framers of the United States Constitution, the United States of America. But also, this is something that we find right across all the species. Democracy is wired in to mammals. And not just mammals. It goes all the way back to insects and fish. And I'll explain to you how and why when we come back. It'll just take a second. This is really fascinating, a little quick factoid. Then I want to get back to how Halliburton is exploiting and abusing democracy to harm democracy and to harm our nation. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Expert on fresh water urges a soft path to head off hard choices over this vital resource. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. We can no longer afford to waste our fresh water, and there's a lot we can do to conserve it. That's the opinion of Peter Glick, president of the Pacific Institute in Oakland, California, and the author of a biennial report on the world's water resources. Glick says we need to rethink the way we use fresh water.
What we need now is really a soft path, a more integrated approach that relies on infrastructure, hard physical things, but it also relies on the proper application of economics, bringing communities into decision-making about water policy, and in particular, it relies on rethinking water use and efficiency.
Glick says efficiency has been the missing ingredient.
Much of our water use is inefficient. We waste much of the water that we use. And if we were to refocus on efficiency and conservation, there's a tremendous amount of water out there that we're using inefficiently that could free up an enormous amount of water for other uses.
Agriculture is by far the biggest water consumer. Glick says farmers need to become more efficient with irrigation, and he says they should plant crops more in tune with the region's water supply.
We spend a lot of water right now on some pretty inefficient, low-valued crops like rice and cotton and alfalfa and irrigated pasture. There's no reason why California should be the leading dairy state rather than Wisconsin, for example, where it rains much more. We spend a lot of water here in California to grow alfalfa and irrigated pasture. That's a very inefficient use of our water.
Glick says a smarter approach could save water for other needs, including nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative here on the IE America Radio Network. Group Decision Making in Animals by Conrad and Roper. From the University of Sussex in Brighton. What these two scientists did is they said nobody in history, apparently, has looked at how animals make decisions when they act in a group. And the assumption had always been that there was a leader who said, okay, it's time to go, leave the water hole and go off to graze. And the leader would leave and everybody would follow. And then the leader would say, okay, we're all done grazing, it's time to go back to the water hole. And everybody would follow. Turns out that's wrong. It's not the case. The way it works, and the leader is largely ignored. What we call the alpha male or alpha female. What happens is that the animals, various animals will just kind of start moving. Some will move off to the north, and some to the south, and some to, or just orient themselves in some cases, they don't move away from the pack. They just point. And when a certain critical threshold is reached, and it actually depends on how important the decision is to the group. You know, what if it's a decision where there would be a disaster if they made the wrong decision, it usually requires about a two-thirds threshold. And if it's a decision where, we could do it this way, we could do it that way, it's 50%. And when about 50% or 51% of the animals are all pointing the same way, then boom, the whole herd moves in that direction, whether the leader is pointing that way or not. And this is true from bees to birds to fish to red deer was what they were studying, what they first studied. Right across the board, all animals that behave in packs. So people say, well, what about the alpha female or the alpha male? Well, there is a sexual pecking order, but that's it. That's the animal that has the first sexual opportunities with other animals in that group, in that pack or tribe or herd or whatever. This is true of gorillas. This is true of primates. So it turns out that the natural state of nature is democracy. Then they ask the question, why? And the answer is that an individual leader, even if it is the wisest, eldest, most knowledgeable of all the animals, will still more frequently make decisions that would harm the group than if the group exercises its collective wisdom and makes a 51% decision every time. You get more extreme swings in behavior and in risk-taking when a small group or an individual makes the decisions for the large group than you do when the large group makes the decision. And that's exactly what we've seen happen in this situation in Iraq, where about a dozen people in the White House and the Department of Defense decided, okay, we're going to do this. In fact, it looks like they decided this even before the 2000 election, because in 1998 they were lobbying President Clinton to do it. We're going to go after Iraq. We're going to get the oil. We're going to stabilize Iraq. We're going to have an island of democracy in the Middle East, and we're going to have a reliable supply of energy for North America. And we're going to stabilize the price of oil, reduce the influence of Saudi Arabia, provide Israel with another ally in the region. I mean, there were many what they considered to be good reasons, and they may well be good reasons. Are they good enough to justify destabilizing the entire world, making the entire international order crazy, flipping several states into a frantic search for the development of nuclear weapons, making the United States feared around the world rather than respected and admired? No, I don't think so. I think the price we've paid is way too high. But still, some of them were arguably good reasons. But this small group of people made the decision. And the wisdom of our founders in this country, they said, no, we don't ever want a small group of people to be making decisions. And that's why they vested the power to make war with the Congress, solely with the Congress. You read the Constitution. The Congress has the power to make war, not the president. And Congress, as many are realizing now, really blew it by handing to the president this power, just as they did with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. You'd think they'd learn. So anyhow, I thought that was fascinating. By the way, before the break, I said, you know, Halliburton is working against the interests of America, or something to that effect. I made some rather sweeping comment, and I would like to retract that. I am sure that the people at Halliburton believe that they're doing the best for this country, and you know, my experience is I think even Don Rumsfeld probably thinks he's doing the best thing for this country. George Bush probably thinks that. My experience has been the people always either rationalize their behavior, even if they know on some level that it's wrong, or you have legitimate differences of opinion about what's the best thing to do. Whether somebody's right or wrong doesn't mean that they're not necessarily operating out of good intentions. And I'm sure the vast majority, if not all the people who are working at Halliburton, think that they're doing a marvelous thing for America and for the world, and, you know, making a profit is not an immoral thing. And maybe they're right. Time will tell. But it sure has a whole lot of people concerned. A lot of people concerned. The fallout from this, the blowback from this. I've got a letter here from Henry Waxman that was sent to Lieutenant General Robert B. Flowers. This was yesterday. He's with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And Henry Waxman sent him this letter in which he says, Halliburton had received task orders worth $378 million. And there's a whole bunch of numbers after $378, $931, $314 to import these products into Iraq. This has been petroleum products. And of this, They were paid $304,486,577 to import 191,965,150 gallons of gasoline. In other words, $300 million to import 190 million gallons of gasoline. On a per gallon basis, Halliburton charged the U.S. government $1.59. This amount, Congressman Waxman says, does not include Halliburton's profits, which are calculated separately, because this is a cost-plus contract. And then he points out that Halliburton is charging us $1.59 a gallon, plus on top of that they get to add their profit, because they're guaranteed a profit no matter what, no matter how badly they screwed up, whatever. And he points out that the average price for Arab Gulf gasoline in the Middle East was about 71 cents a gallon. And another expert said it might be possible to transport gasoline into Iraq for as little as 10 cents a gallon. That's 81 cents a gallon. Even if you buy the most expensive gasoline you can find in the Middle East and you pay the highest price to transport it, Waxman says, even assuming the most expensive transportation estimate, Halliburton's total per gallon costs should not exceed 96 cents. But they're charging us $1.59, and on top of that, they're adding their profit. And then on top of that, we find out that $600 million from the Oil for Food program has been given to Halliburton. This is money that was supposed to go to feed people, and it was instead paid out to Halliburton. Representative Waxman says serious questions have been raised about what happened to the $1 billion in the Oil for Food funding program. It now appears that this money is being used to pay Halliburton to import gasoline into Iraq at outrageously high prices. He further says, I deplore the use of these humanitarian funds from the United Nations to enrich Halliburton. And then from there it gets even stranger. Now we're seeing an amendment being offered that basically you could call the Dick Cheney Amendment. I'll tell you about that in just a second. 1-800-TALK-YES is our phone number if you'd like to comment on these things. If you have some thoughts, questions, arguments, I love people who want to argue, or whatever. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Sarah in Santa Fe is on the line. Sarah, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for the great job you're doing. Something just occurred to me about the nuclear proliferation around the world, that, you know, different countries are maybe now rethinking their nuclear policy as a result of the Bush strategies. And in the United States, people have been more educated to the dangers of nuclear power, and it's getting harder and harder in some places to develop nuclear power plants, even for utilities rather than warfare. So the nuclear industry, I believe, is looking to expand in different parts of the world now. And one way they can do it is by terrorizing the rest of the world and making countries like Iran and North Korea go full speed ahead and try to develop nuclear capability. And then the U.S. even comes in and says to North Korea, well, we don't want you doing this, but we'll help you with this other nuclear plant for peaceful purposes, and we'll come in and help. So I just think it's sort of a backdoor way to get the nuclear power industry more business.
Yeah, I believe that we helped build the reactor in North Korea.
Yes, but I also think a strategy of belligerence pays off for the nuclear industry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is all speculation, but I just feel that, you know, if you look at patterns, it seems to me that that's what's going on.
Yeah, in fact, I would say a strategy of belligerence is the most profitable right across the board.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's hugely profitable for the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's very profitable, as you point out, for the nuclear industry. It's profitable for the weapons industry. It's profitable it's just right across the board. So much money now is being spent by this country. We are, I don't remember the Dwight Eisenhower's quote exactly. I'll have to look it up. But, you know, we are basically spending our youth and our dollars and the wealth of our nation in a way that is just absolutely inappropriate, in my opinion. Sarah, thank you for the call. I appreciate
it.
I appreciate your comments. Here's the blowback. This administration, you got people, members of the United States Senate. I mean, this is the exclusive club, right? The six-year club. Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, not a radical lefty by any means. This, you know, a good down the middle, middle of the road, rational Democrat, has this to say. Now, keep in mind, Dick Cheney is receiving every year somewhere between $100,000 and $1 million, depending on the year, in payments from Halliburton in what's called deferred compensation. Halliburton, of course, was not profitable the year that Dick Cheney became president. But as soon as they started getting these contracts, they became very profitable. They went from losing almost $100 million to making over $200 million in the first year that Dick Cheney started pulling them in to all this stuff. It was 2001 when they first got the contracts to put out oil well fires in Iraq, and that was before we had even debated whether we were going to go into Iraq. And Cheney has unexercised stock options, and he's drawing a salary from Halliburton right now. And so the Senate, the United States Senate, is looking at this, and Frank Lautenberg has some very tough thoughts on this, which are worth sharing with you.
And I'm going to be offering an amendment to the supplemental called the Ethics in Government Contracting Act.
The supplemental that he's attaching it to is the funding for Iraq.
My amendment's straightforward. It slams the revolving door shut. It says the administration cannot enter into contracts for Iraqi reconstruction with private companies that maintain financial relationships with officials at the very top of our government.
Now, what does that mean, financial relationships with officials at the very top of our government? This shouldn't be called the Integrity in Government Amendment or whatever you call it. This should be called the Stop Dick Cheney and Halliburton Amendment, because that's what it's all about. Listen to the specifics of this.
Under my amendment, if the vice president, or a member of the cabinet.
Remember that Condi Rice was a bigwig with Chevron Oil. In fact, she has a tanker named after her, the Condoleezza Rice.
Continues to receive deferred salary from a company, that company cannot receive a reconstruction contract. If the president, vice president, or member of the cabinet holds unexercised stock options in a company, that company would not be eligible for reconstruction contracts.
Amen. Extraordinary. Frank Lautenberg here talking about this. This is an issue, friends, that is not going to go away. This administration has been so blatant. It's so shocking that I'm almost I am at a loss for words. There's not something that immediately comes to mind to describe the extraordinary exploitation of office that is going on in Washington, D.C. And here we have Saudi Arabia talking about becoming a nuclear power. We've got Carl Levin, Michigan Senator Carl Levin, has now, I mean, this you're seeing the Senate in open revolt. That has asked the General Accounting Office to audit billions of dollars in contracts awarded to U.S. firms to rebuild Iraq. This is from Reuters yesterday. He said, Levin said, we need an independent audit of these issues to ensure that the taxpayers' hard-earned money is not being wasted. You know, are we being ripped off? And then on top of this, yesterday, the House, the Associated Press, the House delivered a broad but ambiguous rebuke to President Bush on Tuesday, voting in favor of loans to Iraq and improved medical benefits for veterans and military reservists. See, Bush wants it to be, you know, free cash, no loans, taxpayers don't get it back. And in fact, he also says, we're not willing to appropriate money to pay for it. We're just going to add it to the national debt. And he wanted to reduce the benefits, the medical benefits, to veterans and military reservists. So the House of Representatives, which is overwhelmingly Republican controlled, I mean, the House of Representatives is the conservative of the two branches of government. It was the Senate, you'll recall, that passed the reconstruction of Iraq with the proviso that it had to be a loan. So then it goes to the House, and the House says, okay, we'll vote on that too. We'll agree with that vote. Now, this was a non-binding vote. And the reality is that this thing is going to get worked out in conference. After the Senate votes on something and the House votes on something, if they're not identical pieces of legislation, if they're not written the same way by the same people, then they come together into a conference committee and they work out the details until they've got something that they believe is acceptable to both bodies, and then it gets presented again and voted on again. And that's going to happen. And in all probability, the loan provision is going to be stripped out because yesterday the White House says, if you submit a bill like this to me, George Bush said, you give me a bill like this to sign that has loan language in it, I'll veto it. It's toast. And so, you know, the Republicans, of course, are going, whoa. And the Democrats are saying, well, that would be an interesting battle, but they know it's one they'll lose. And nobody wants to be accused of holding up the money to the troops, even though they have enough money to operate through May. So this thing's going to get passed and signed, no doubt about it. Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy Gummies.
Juicy Gummies?
That's right. Juicy Gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The Peach Rings, Froggies, Creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy Gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away Juicy Gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy Gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells Juicy Gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Bill. Temple in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang, and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
Ah! For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. Jim Jeffords of Vermont was the only person who voted. This is a 97-1 vote in the United States Senate last Friday. And what was this about? It was the Bush administration had proposed, they don't want to increase veterans' benefits. They don't want to increase. They don't want to improve health care for veterans. They didn't want extra combat pay for veterans and for soldiers in Iraq, but they did want to give them all a medal. Now, the kind of medal we're talking about here is, in all probability, one of those little, you know, cloth strips, or it looks like fabric around metal or whatever. Those little strips that go on the. I forget. It's been so many years. I forget the name of the plate there that hangs on your chest with all those medals on it. And it was going to be called the War on Terrorism Medal. And it was going to go to anybody who had fought in Iraq or Afghanistan. And Jim Jeffords says, now, and he, by the way, John McCain, Republican of Arizona, and Jeffrey Bingham, Democrat of New Mexico, also echoed Jeffords' point, but they wouldn't vote with him. He said, this is part of the, well, here, in fact, I'll quote him. He said, "Those who support giving this medal to our troops in Iraq are once again trying to make a connection between September 11 and Iraq that simply does not exist. I am a veteran, and I wholeheartedly support our troops, but I believe it does the men and women in our military a great disservice to misrepresent the reasons why they are in Iraq. They certainly deserve medals for their service, but I will not be a part of the White House campaign to redefine this war." End quote. Jim Jeffords, the only member of the United States Senate to vote against giving a War on Terrorism medal to soldiers fighting in Iraq. He thought they should get a War in Iraq medal, which makes sense to me. Makes perfect sense. And then here we have a situation in the Baghdad slum in Sadr City. You're familiar with this? This is the local folks threw out the people that were appointed by us. And he says, this is from one of the local people, a local lawyer, an Iraqi. He says, "When the people of California were unhappy with their authorities, they threw them out and elected Schwarzenegger. So why is it that Americans can do it and we in Sadr City cannot?" Democracy comes to Iraq maybe a little early. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America radio program, the No Spoon Feeding Zone.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003. My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Pentagon disclosed that more than a dozen American troops haven't returned to duty after getting a vacation from Iraq, but dismissed suggestions that there is any significant AWOL problem. 16 troops failed to show up at airports in Baltimore and Germany for return flights to the Persian Gulf region. None has been declared absent without leave as officials try to sort out the cases. To give troops some relief from long deployments in Iraq, the Pentagon started giving two-week leaves in the longest R&R program since the Vietnam War. But in the first 5 days of return flights starting August 12th, 28 people didn't show up. It was later learned that 20 had permission or some other reason. The other 8 were unaccounted for, as were 8 who also missed flights in the past 5 days. After failing to attract large numbers of foreign peacekeepers in Iraq, the Pentagon is drawing up plans to rotate in as many as 30,000 more reservists early next year, despite growing worries in Congress about strains on the force. These troops would join 15,000 Army National Guard troops already in line to go into Iraq on a year-long rotation to replace U.S. troops now in Iraq. U.S. Marines may also be sent into Iraq by February to ease the burden on Army forces. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld refused to discuss how many more reservists might be needed next year, saying no final decisions had been made. But Rumsfeld raised the possibility that up to 10,000 troops for Iraq offered by Turkey might never go due to resistance by the Iraqi Governing Council, meaning that U.S. forces might be needed in their place. Federal authorities were criticized for prosecuting a 20-year-old college student who acknowledged smuggling box cutters and other banned items onto commercial planes. Nathaniel Heatwell could spend up to 10 years in prison if convicted of taking a dangerous weapon aboard an aircraft, which he claims to have done to alert authorities to holes in airline security. Representative John Mica of Florida, chairman of the House Aviation Subcommittee, said prosecutors should concentrate on people who actually pose a threat. More IE America Network news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours. Forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A handcuffed man arrested for crashing a stolen car Tuesday surprised the California Highway Patrol officer by climbing into his squad car and driving away. The suspect slid into the driver's seat after being arrested and sped off while the officer was distracted. The police car was found in a ravine. The man remains at large. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I am a popcorn enthusiast. Popcorn, the most provocative of all the snack foods. The silky smooth texture, the rich buttery ecstasy.
Ow! The unpopped kernels!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say,
ah.
Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
When George W. was governor of our state, we Texans learned firsthand of a deep anti-democratic flaw in his makeup. He abhors dissent and is totally dismissive not only of dissenters, but also of the people's right to dissent. As governor, as presidential candidate, and now as president, Bush's unconscionable, and I think unconstitutional, disrespect of our fundamental right to question authority and confront power has surfaced again and again in an alarming Bush doctrine of contained dissent. What this amounts to is an imperious decision that any and all protesters must literally be corralled, kept in protest pens well beyond the sight and sound of His Eminence and of the media. In Texas, Governor Bush's security police suddenly swept down on a group of peaceful picketers who were on the public sidewalk in front of the governor's mansion, a sidewalk that historically has been the site of protest. At this time, George was launching his presidential run, and he simply didn't want these dissenters to his environmental policies getting between him and the TV cameras, so he had the state police move them to a designated protest zone in a faraway parking lot. At the Republican presidential nominating convention in Philadelphia in 2000, candidate Bush created a fenced-in, out-of-sight protest zone that would only hold a few hundred people at a time. And, as president, his autocratic games continue. For example, last year at the Columbia, South Carolina airport, a protester with a No War for Oil sign stood in an area where Bush supporters stood. The protester was ordered to move a half a mile away. He refused, so Bush's police arrested him. This is Jim Hightower saying, four groups have now sued the Secret Service for systematically shutting out the people's protest. To learn more, call the American Civil Liberties Union, 215-923-4357.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast and around the world on the internet, on Sirius satellite radio, and on terrestrial radio stations all across the nation. Got a really neat little. Where did it go here? This is just so cool. I've got to share this with you. Ah, here it is. Ben, the fellow who runs WhiteRoseSociety.org, which is where this program and also Mike Malloy's program and Peter Werby's program are all archived, says we're at 90 countries. Is the number of countries, the number of visitors in the following countries who have actually logged on and listened to our programs. 147,000 in the United States, 5,500 in Canada, 2,000 in the United Kingdom, 1,300 in Japan, 621 visits from Germany. This is since March. 543 from Australia, 464 from France, 333 from Finland, 289 from Thailand, 283 from Spain, 260 from Brazil. And on the list goes, these are all, you know, in the few hundreds, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Singapore, New Zealand, Belgium, Poland, Mexico, Taiwan, Korea, Denmark, the Cocos Islands, Puerto Rico, Italy, Switzerland, Ireland, Malaysia, the Czech Republic, Greece, Israel, Austria, India, Uruguay, Portugal, Hong Kong, Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, Turkey, Russia, the Philippines, Chile, Egypt, USS, former USSR, United Arab Emirates, Croatia, Venezuela, Slovenia, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Luxembourg, Argentina, Iceland, the Cayman Islands, Colombia, and that's number 54. It continues. Tanzania, Honduras. It continues all the way down to Cuba. We actually have a listener in Cuba. Estonia, the Maldives, Bolivia, Albania, Sri Lanka. It's really quite Nepal. We've got people listening to the program in Nepal. I'm amazed. So anyway, interesting things going on. Howard Dean has unveiled an energy plan. And in a few minutes here, we're going to have David Talbot on, I believe, from Salon.com. And we'll see how that goes. But over the short term, here we go. The energy bill gets worse. The New York Times ran an editorial. This was back about 3 weeks ago, about the energy bill and the state of energy in the United States. And, you know, saying the energy bill really doesn't work. And it's being cherry-picked by these legislators, and they're stuffing all this stuff into it. And Howard Dean now has come out with his idea of what should be. And we'll get to that in just a minute. First, I want to bring you up to date on what's going on with Salon.com. David Talbot is the founder, editor-in-chief, and CEO of Salon.com. Under David's leadership, Salon has won most major web awards, including the Online Journalism Association's annual awards for general excellence and investigative reporting. Salon.com has also been named Best Website by Time Magazine, Advertising Age, Business Week, U.S. News & World Report, and Entertainment Weekly. Talbot has been called one of the 20 stars of the new news by Newsweek magazine, and I am a premium member of Salon.com, a reader of Salon.com. I think it's a great product. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
Thank you. Do you feel that with, and by the way, if any of our callers have questions for David, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. It's 1-800-825-5937. I'm wondering if you think that with Fox News and AM talk radio, or at least the right-wing element of it, that the right has saturated the media to the point that we're about to see the pendulum swing back the other way, that there's a backlash forming. People are saying, wait a minute, I'm getting it now, that the news has been so, you know, they've been playing the refs, to quote Rich Bond from the late 80s when he said, you know, the whole strategy was to keep the media off balance and so that they wouldn't print stories that had a liberal bias. And the people are saying, hey, wait a minute, we've had enough. We want to know what the other side of the story is. Do you think that's happening?
I really do. I think the pendulum has swung so far the other way now that people all across the country are going, what's going on here? You know, it's not just Fox News and the talk radio, guys, Rush Limbaugh and everyone else. It's those people have tilted everything else, you know.
Yeah.
So Fox News has tilted MSNBC, and they've tilted CNN, and everyone for a while there, you know, just tried to copy Rush Limbaugh on Fox News. And, of course, now people are fed up with it. You see now on the bestseller list Al Franken's book. You see Michael Moore's book. You see Jim Hightower's book. So finally, I think people are going, let's have a little more balance here. If the right wing can come out and, you know, help undermine a presidency the way they did with Clinton and smear people and take the gloves off, then what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and now you have this response from liberals on the left. You know, my feeling is I'm not angry at Fox or Rupert Murdoch or Roger Ailes, the guys who run Fox or Limbaugh. That's what they do, you know. That's their business, and that's their belief, and I assume it's their genuine beliefs. They're conservatives and so on. But I fault, you know, the rest of the media for not, you know, saying, okay, we need to balance this now. Why didn't MSNBC decide, hey, let's counter-program here? They're offering all right-wing news all the time on Fox. We'll offer some liberal or progressive alternatives.
Well, they actually did that with Phil Donahue, and they had higher ratings than any of their programs, including Chris Matthews' Hardball, had ever had. And they dumped him because they brought in this consultant who said, you don't want to position yourself as the lefties with a war coming up.
That's right. That's right. They pulled the plug on Donahue, like, as you say, at highest ratings. Look, I'm not a huge fan of Phil's. You know, I think he had his day, and whether or not he fit in with the current media climate or not, that's another question. But as you say, he still did have the highest ratings. And if you replace him, why don't you bring in a Michael Moore or an Al Franken or someone else?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who could do a show like that.
Well, do you think it might have something to do with MSNBC being owned in large part by NBC, which is owned by GE, which is one of the largest defense contractors in the world?
Well, I got to say, as the media gets gobbled up by the, you know, five or six same companies, all own now, you know, basically all our news and entertainment, we're going to start getting a lot less diversity. And, you know, the kind of gall that the Bush administration, the FCC, had to try and let these media companies gobble up things even faster with their new ownership rules is just, you know, outrageous. And, you know, even there, finally, they got some backlash from not just liberals, but from the NRA and other people going, whoa, what's going on here? This country is becoming an oligarchy. And where's our democracy?
Yeah, not just an oligarchy, an aristocracy.
An aristocracy, that's right.
Do you think, in along those lines, then, do you think it was a good idea for you folks to go public? I mean, now you're in a position where presumably hostile takeovers are not out of the question?
You know, that was a tough decision for us. We went public at the height of sort of the dot-com exuberance. We were able to raise money that kept the company going, which, of course, was important. But you do have a lot of pressures on you as a public company, but I don't think being taken over is part of our problem, because I think our investors are very loyal, and they're not in this to flip Salon and make a quick buck by selling out to GE or Disney or whoever offers the most money. They are men and women who really do believe that there needs to be an independent media in America, and they think that eventually Salon will turn a profit, and I feel that way too, and they're willing to be patient and stick with us, fortunately, for that reason.
Yeah. Great. We're talking with David Talbot, who is the founder, editor-in-chief, and CEO of Salon.com. David, you've received a lot of criticism. Well, actually, before I get into that, I wanted to talk to you about Andrew Sullivan's column, but before I get into that, I'm wondering how you perceive your relationship with the other, as you mentioned, alternative media, you know, the CommonDreams.org, Alternet, BuzzFlash, the other sites out there that are more, you know, centrist or left-leaning. Or even very left.
Well, I think the main difference between Salon and a lot of these other worthy websites that are offering, you know, progressive viewpoints on the web is that Salon actually has a newsroom, and you know, we have enough resources where we have, you know, 26 editorial employees plus freelancers all around the world filing stories for us, and we adhere to traditional journalistic standards of reporting and fact checking and all that. And that's a luxury that Salon has because we do have the resources to do it. A lot of these other progressive sites, as valuable as they are often just one or two, you know, man or woman shops. And they don't have the time and resources to do investigative reporting or break news stories. What they're basically doing is commenting on the news, which is important. But I think with Salon, our best contribution is the original research and reporting that we do. You know, from Clinton days on, whether it was the you know, our investigations of Kenneth Starr and his political connections, our outing of Henry Hyde, which caused a lot of stir during the middle of the impeachment, up to the 2000 election when we broke a story on black voters being scrubbed from the rolls in Florida, up to the current day when we broke a story on how the EPA hid information about pollution, high pollution levels, dangerously high pollution levels at Ground Zero, and the no-fly list, a secret no-fly list that the Bush administration maintains on people, not just terrorist suspects, but political critics of the administration. So Salon continues to break important stories. We do that, as I say, because we have a staff of reporters and freelancers who we can afford to give the time to do these stories. I think it's great what MoveOn, what Alternet, what a lot of these bloggers, Josh Marshall's blog, these are all keeping democratic journalism, small d, alive in this country. I think if it weren't for the web, Clinton would have been impeached and convicted and out of office. I think the Bush administration would have gotten away with even more than it did. Don't forget, it was bloggers like our own Joe Connison, who's a columnist for Salon, and Josh Marshall, who blew the whistle on Trent Lott and his outrageous comments about the good old days of the racist South. Mm-hmm. And if we hadn't done that, the rest of the media would have gone to sleep on it. The Washington Post, New York Times, no one was saying a word about that until the web took it up as a crusade. So the web, in some ways, has kept, you know, the First Amendment and free speech and journalism alive in this country.
Yeah, I want to get into the issue. We're going to go to a break here in about 30 seconds, but get into the issue of Andrew Sullivan's column, and you know, Newsmax and WorldNet Daily don't have liberal columnists, and I'm curious, you know, if there's a major difference between the left and the right, if the left thinks there should be a balance in viewpoint or not, and that kind of thing. We're talking with David Talbot, the founder and editor-in-chief and chief executive officer of Salon.com. Under David's leadership, Salon has won most major web awards, including the Online Journalism Association's annual awards for general excellence and investigative reporting. And we'll be back right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Hey, Sneezy, go to sleep.
I can't.
You could if you take NyQuil. It'll help your symptoms. So you'll sleep great. You know, like you do when you cuddle on the couch with a warm fleece blanket, a cozy fire, and a chick flick.
Now that's my kind of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved Liquicaps.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
When George W. was governor of our state, we Texans learned firsthand of a deep anti-democratic flaw in his makeup. He abhors dissent and is totally dismissive not only of dissenters, but also of the people's right to dissent. As governor, as presidential candidate, and now as president, Bush's unconscionable, and I think unconstitutional, disrespect of our fundamental right to question authority and confront power has surfaced again and again in an alarming Bush doctrine of contained dissent. What this amounts to is an imperious decision that any and all protesters must literally be corralled, kept in protest pens well beyond the sight and sound of His Eminence and of the media. In Texas, Governor Bush's security police suddenly swept down on a group of peaceful picketers who were on the public sidewalk in front of the governor's mansion, a sidewalk that historically has been the site of protest. At this time, George was launching his presidential run, and he simply didn't want these dissenters to his environmental policies getting between him and the TV cameras, so he had the state police move them to a designated protest zone in a faraway parking lot. At the Republican presidential nominating convention in Philadelphia in 2000, candidate Bush created a fenced-in, out-of-sight protest zone that would only hold a few hundred people at a time. And, as president, his autocratic games continue. For example, last year at the Columbia, South Carolina airport, a protester with a No War for Oil sign stood in an area where Bush supporters stood. The protester was ordered to move a half a mile away. He refused, so Bush's police arrested him. This is Jim Hightower saying, four groups have now sued the Secret Service for systematically shutting out the people's protest. To learn more, call the American Civil Liberties Union, 215-923-4357.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It doesn't matter what they do. All that matters is my relationship to you.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservative. We're talking this hour to David Talbot. In this half hour, founder, editor-in-chief, and chief executive officer of Salon.com. And David, just before the break, I'd asked you what kind of response you were getting to Andrew Sullivan's column. And also, I'm wondering if you're going to be pursuing the White House leak story, with an eye to keeping it out front and center. And if you've done anything following up on the Independence, I believe it was, story in the UK about the state of Georgia's elections being stolen in the year 2002.
Good, great questions, Tom.
Well, a lot of stuff there for the...
Let's start with the first one. Andrew Sullivan, of course, is a well-known conservative, Catholic, gay, journalist and commentator, was the editor of the New Republic for years, had a column in the New York Times till Hal Raines, then editor, let him go. And he has his own blog, which is one of the more successful blogs on the web.
Mm-hmm.
We started running his column, and we've published Andrew off and on over the years, but we ran a column by him. He has suspended the column, by the way, now, so he's not running just because he just couldn't keep doing it for now. That was his desire, not ours. And here's my feeling. We got a lot of criticism from liberals for doing this, and they made the point that you just did. They said, look, Fox has, poor old wimpy, Combs, but not a fire-breathing guy like Andrew Sullivan. Very few of these other conservative media outlets have the courtesy of putting progressive alternative viewpoints on their shows. And when they do, they're kind of punching bags like Combs is. But Andrew is a very articulate and aggressive advocate for his ideas.
Right. So what's he doing there?
Yeah, what is he doing there? That's what a lot of people have been asking. So here's my feeling. We started Salon off in the spirit that, hey, it's going to be a salon. It's going to be like a dinner party. It's going to be a number of different people from different points of view here. And what makes a good dinner party is when you have some differences of opinion and different backgrounds. If we're all, saying the same thing, it can get pretty dull. And I'd been an editor at Mother Jones for years back in the 70s and 80s, and I didn't want to repeat, that and just put out a publication that was preaching to the choir that only other progressives read. So I've tried to make Salon eclectic, and I've tried to have, differing viewpoints in Salon as much as possible. But I tell you, it's gotten harder and harder for me as the media has begun tilting more and more to the right, starting with the Clinton administration and up to the present. I started to feel like, hey, what's really missing out there is more progressive viewpoints, and we need to help balance, the seesaw at this point, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, but if you don't preach to the choir, you're not going to have a choir.
And
historically, newspapers in the United States took positions. I mean, when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s in Michigan, the Detroit Free Press was the liberal paper, and the Detroit News was the conservative paper. And they editorialized those ways, and they slanted their news stories that way, relatively speaking. And, I've covered those things that were of interest to their constituencies, and people bought one of those papers depending on their political persuasion.
And that is a good tradition,
long tradition.
Some ways in American journalism. On the other hand, Tom, I've got to say, I'm of two minds about this, and I disagree with both in the great tradition of liberalism. And part of me is a partisan, kind of crusading guy. I grew up in the 60s, worked on Bobby Kennedy's campaign when I was a kid, worked in the anti-war movement during Vietnam. And, I want to change this country, and that's why I went into journalism. I was inspired by Watergate and all of that. And part of me feels like, hey, the tradition of liberalism is to be tolerant and to hear other people's points of view. So those two things continue to clash within me, and I think you see that reflected in Salon. We've kind of resolved it for now because Andrew has left by doing something new. What we do is a roundup of conservative columnists and commentators. We call it Right Hook. We have a staffer kind of monitor what the right wing is saying on various subjects, and we pull it together once a week for our readers.
That's not, great. David, yeah. David, I still have a couple of questions. Can you stick around for a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. Talking to David Talbot, the founder, editor-in-chief, and CEO of Salon.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the no spoon-feeding zone. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Expert on fresh water urges a soft path to head off hard choices over this vital resource. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. We can no longer afford to waste our fresh water, and there's a lot we can do to conserve it. That's the opinion of Peter Glick, president of the Pacific Institute in Oakland, California, and the author of a biennial report on the world's water resources. Glick says we need to rethink the way we use fresh water.
What we need now is really a soft path, a more integrated approach that relies on infrastructure, hard physical things, but it also relies on the proper application of economics, bringing communities into decision-making about water policy, and in particular, it relies on rethinking water use and efficiency.
Glick says efficiency has been the missing ingredient.
Much of our water use is inefficient. We waste much of the water that we use. And if we were to refocus on efficiency and conservation, there's a tremendous amount of water out there that we're using inefficiently that could free up an enormous amount of water for other uses.
Agriculture is by far the biggest water consumer. Glick says farmers need to become more efficient with irrigation, and he says they should plant crops more in tune with the region's water supply.
We spend a lot of water right now on some pretty inefficient, low-valued crops like rice and cotton and alfalfa and irrigated pasture. There's no reason why California should be the leading dairy state rather than Wisconsin, for example, where it rains much more. We spend a lot of water here in California to grow alfalfa and irrigated pasture. That's a very inefficient use of our water.
Glick says a smarter approach could save water for other needs, including nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome
back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks of the RNC. We're talking this hour with David Talbot, editor-in-chief, founder, and CEO of Salon.com, the extraordinary online, what would you call it, David? Magazine?
We're an online newspaper, really, because we come out every day. You know, more than a magazine. You know, Tom, I'd love to talk about the voting machine story that you brought up, because I think that's an amazing story that your listeners really have to be aware of if they aren't already. Salon has done some groundbreaking reporting on this, and others have done it as well. You know, just when you think the Bush administration and the Republicans can't get any more ruthless about, holding on to power, you come across a story like this. There's a new we've all been reading about these electronic voting machines, and these are the machines that supposedly are going to be introduced or have been introduced to deal with some of the problems we saw in Florida and elsewhere in 2000. And the software for these machines are being one of the more popular electronic machines are being produced by a company in Ohio called Diebold, D-I-E-B-O-L-D. And this company is headed by an ardent Republican, a strong supporter of the president's, who has vowed in a letter that he sent out to Republican funders to deliver the state of Ohio to George Bush in 2004.
David, this is a story that's familiar to our listeners. I had written the first story on this topic that was published on Common Dreams about a year ago, in which we outed Chuck Hagel. And it led to the article on the Hill.
That's right.
On the Hill.
That's right.
Where they asked him if what I had said was true, and his staff had a 2-hour meeting, and the head of the group within the Senate that is responsible for ethics resigned as a result of that.
Well, that's and, great. You know, then, Tom, kudos to you.
A whole mess of things. So. And we have
for being on top of the story. Then,
well, thank you, David. We talked about this many times. We've had Rush Holt on here. We've had Lynn Landis,
right.
and you know about the
strange results, of course, in the last election in Georgia
and in California now. So I'm curious about what you all are going to do with this story, because it doesn't seem to be getting a lot of traction out there, other than in the UK.
We are working on this story, and I got to tell you, you're going to be working with a major print magazine. I can't announce who yet. But it's a major national print magazine, and Salon has joined forces with them to work on this story specifically.
Great.
We have
a great
reporter who's been, you know, on this beat, and we're going to keep at it because, you know, you have to watch these people with a hawk eye. I just interviewed for Salon Bobby Kennedy Jr. yesterday, who's, a great has done great public service as an environmentalist in New York, protecting the Hudson River against GE and other polluters. And, you know, he said in the course of this interview, you know, people don't realize how fragile democracy is, that you have to fight tooth and nail to protect it. Every generation does, as his father did. That really is the truth. And you see it more than ever during the Bush administration. I don't like to be paranoid. You know, people on the left can be that way and on the right. And I like to try and, you know, think the best of people. But I think this administration has just shown its true colors and how radical and extreme it is. You know, day after day in slashing environmental regulations, in lying to the public about going to war. Basically, this administration is a wholly owned subsidiary of some of the worst corporate powers in American society,
and
they have to be removed.
Yeah, and you can track it all back, by the way. In 1886, there was a Supreme Court decision, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, in which the court was believed, right up to this day, people still believe that the court ruled that corporations should have rights as persons under the Bill of Rights. Not unions, not governments, not nonprofit organizations, not churches, not civic groups, but corporations, for-profit corporations.
That's right. That is the ethic.
Yeah, and in fact, the court didn't rule that way, it turns out, but that's a long story. But anyhow, that has been that's echoed all the way up to today, you know, with the Boston versus Bilotti decision in 1978, which said that, you know, corporations have First Amendment, not only have personhood, but they have First Amendment rights, and money is speech, and they can give money to politicians, and it's just, we have this absolute mess as a consequence of this doctrine of corporate personhood. But you're not on here to listen to me preach to you. So, last question I have here, I guess, is are you going to be also pursuing this story of the David Sirota calls it Intimidate, the attempts by this administration to intimidate potential
whistleblowers, basically.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, going after Joe Wilson and outing his wife.
That's an essential story, and again, shame on the media for not keeping it on the front page day after day. I interviewed Joe Wilson last week for Salon. I think he's an American hero, as the first President Bush called him for his service in Iraq during the before the first Gulf War. He's a brave American. His wife, as we know now, was an undercover CIA agent outed by the White House. The first President Bush said such an act is an act of treason. I feel the same way. And we'll see how aggressive the Ashcroft Justice Department is in going after the culprit. I don't give him give it much hope, frankly, unless the media keeps the pressure on daily. So we are doing that, and we're going to keep raising hell about this. You know, my feeling is we're at a point now with the Bush administration that we were with Nixon before Watergate. I call it the tipping point, a political tipping point, where you have an administration that has not only so offended many of its citizens, but offended a part of the political establishment itself, as Nixon clearly had before Watergate, you know,
right,
with his rule of one man over democracy. And clearly some people within the Washington establishment decided it was time for him to go and began leaking to the Washington Post, and therefore we had Watergate. I think we're at the same stage now with an administration that's so out of control, so extreme, that it's offended other people in the Republican Party even. It's offended much of the Washington establishment and alarmed them. And I think we are at a situation now where if the media does its job, a lot of these stories are going to start breaking. And hopefully it will wake up the American public and we'll vote this.
I've been saying for a long time, these guys are like, you know, the little kid with the finger in the dike, and only they've got a whole bunch of them there, and they've got other fingers in all these little holes, and as a few of them start coming unglued, I mean, this is what they're so terrified about. This is why they won't allow an investigation of 9/11. It's why they won't involve investigations of anything. They're not going to appoint a special prosecutor or empower Congress to do anybody to
that's
do anything.
That's right. But in the process, they've alienated even the CIA and the intelligence community. Many of these people are good professionals who resent having their intelligence gathering process corrupted and politicized the way that the Bush administration did in the run-up to the Iraq War. And so I think, as I say, my hope is that good, you know, decent people in the government are going to be turning against the Bush administration more and more, talking to reporters like Salon and elsewhere, and these stories will be coming out the way they should be.
Yeah, great. David Talbot, founder, editor-in-chief, and CEO of Salon.com. David, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. It was my pleasure.
Great. Thank you. Okay, we're back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Let's look at some of them. Oh, by the way, a question. I was going to get into this in the next hour, but let me just pose this right now. Because I just got an email here from Shelby, who runs radiopower.org. Radiopower.org is one of the web radio stations that rebroadcasts this program, and excellent site, worthy of your support. And Shelby had sent me an email a couple days ago about this college student who the FBI believes hid box cutters, blah, blah, blah. We're talking about, what's his name? I've got it here someplace. But anyhow, we're talking about this guy. And Nathaniel Heatwool. And he says, Shelby said to me, criminal or patriot? And I responded, or nutcase. And Shelby just came back an email a little bit ago and said, really, you can whine about security on your talk show and I can broadcast it, but most people think it's left-wing tinfoil cap paranoia. He made people believe in one action. I say he is a patriot. That's interesting. I hadn't, you know, that would almost require him to have some sort of political motivation, or is it pure patriotism? Is it pure patriotism, or is this guy, is he a nutcase, what do you think? Do you think he's a patriot, a criminal, or a nutcase? And that's going to segue into another topic that I want to get into in some detail, which is what, you know, how do we handle people who are whistleblowers? And for that matter, how are we handling nutcases? That's a terrible word. How are we handling people who are mentally ill? A study that was just done
finds that 1 in 6 people in American prisons are mentally ill. 1 in 6, three times as many mentally ill people are right now receiving treatments in our prisons, and the treatment, of course, is not appropriate, than are receiving treatment in our mental hospitals. There are about 300,000 mentally ill people in our nation's jails and prisons, only 80,000 mentally ill people in our hospitals. And Human Rights Watch has just come out and said, this is wrong. This lack of expertise has led to gross mistreatment of mentally ill prisoners. And points out that they're often punished with solitary confinement because they're behaving nutty. They put them in solitary, which only makes their mental illness worse. So we have, you know, there's the issue of the systemic problem. It just goes all over the place. Anyhow, I wanted to get back to the energy plan thing. We had started that early, and I started to open the hour with this. And I just want to get back and clear this up. New York Times editorial, the energy bill gets worse. This was a week or two ago. And they say, how has Congress chosen to develop such a strategy, this national energy strategy that we need to have, that Dick Cheney was put in charge of putting together back in 2001 when he sat around with a bunch of guys from the energy industry, Ken Lay and his buddies, and carved up the oil fields of Iraq and the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. You'll find these documents on the JudicialWatch.org website, or you can go to our show notes. There's a link to them, directly to them. It's a little easier to find that way. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on show notes and scroll down, you'll find it. And because we did a program about this a week or three ago. And here they are, back before 9/11, carving up the oil fields of these countries in the Middle East and coming up with a national American national energy strategy. So how has Congress chosen to develop such a strategy, asked the New York Times rhetorically, by passing two mediocre energy bills and then handing the task of reconciling them, there's one from the Senate, one from the House, to Senator Pete Domenici and Representative Billy Townsend, both reliable allies of the fossil fuel industry, although Mr. Domenici is also a big fan of nuclear power and neither a visionary thinker. Since Labor Day, these two veteran dealmakers have been cherry-picking provisions they like, discarding those they don't, and for good measure infuriating their colleagues by adding new items of their own. New York Times, as you can tell, is not particularly enthusiastic about this. And so Howard Dean, yesterday, it was reported, it's in today's newspapers, this actually from the Vermont Press Bureau, so I'm not sure. You know, what's really interesting, let me digress for just a moment. I don't have this story right here in front of me. I meant to tear it out, and I forgot. But on both of the front pages of the newspaper, the Vermont newspaper here, the Burlington Free Press and the Montpelier Times Argus, in the Free Press it was buried a couple pages in, but in the front sections of both papers, it was a front page story in the Montpelier Times Argus, are these articles about the Dean Divers. They've got the Dean Divers down here at the Capitol Building. It was a few blocks from me. At the Capitol Building, they've got a part of, you know, where they keep the archives, and they've got, like, you know, papers going back to the 1700s. And Howard Dean's papers are down there. And you've got all of these conservatives who are digging through his papers. There's like a small army of them down there. And they've been there for weeks looking for any little thing from his past that they can use against him. Isn't it mind-boggling? Anyhow, in a proposed this, so this from the Vermont Press Bureau of Claude R. Max, Howard Dean unveils national energy plan. In a proposal that would seem familiar to Vermonters, see, keep in mind, here in Vermont, 40% of our energy comes from renewable sources, mostly dams, mostly hydro dams. Anyhow, in a proposal that would seem familiar to Vermonters, former Governor Howard Dean on Tuesday unveiled a national energy plan that relies heavily on expanding the use of renewable fuels. Also here in Vermont, over in Burlington, the largest city in the state, they're now generating electricity from wood chips. So all over the state, you know, when loggers are logging, there's a market for this stuff, and so they take the slash, you know, the leftover pieces of the trees and things and branches and whatnot, they chip them, and they take them over to Burlington and sell them. And similarly, the highway crews and road crews and utility crews who cut down trees and clean up right-of-ways and things are, you know, about to fall on power lines and things, they're all chipping the extra wood, the excess wood, and shipping it over to Burlington where they burn it,
in a super high-tech plant that operates at very, very high temperatures and produces almost no air pollution compared to a coal-fired or an oil-fired plant. And they burn it and then create electricity. So anyhow, Howard Dean's plan includes a requirement that the nation generate 20% of its electricity from renewable sources by 2020. He also proposed to expand the energy production tax credit to include geothermal and solar energy. Do you get this? The energy production tax credit. A tax credit is where they give you cash. And who qualifies for it right now? The oil industry. The nuclear industry. But does the solar industry quite? No, they can't get that. And what about geothermal? No, sorry, guys. He also proposed to expand the energy production tax credit to include geothermal and solar energy and tax credits for people who use solar energy at home. This is going back to something that Jimmy Carter had put into place. And you remember that? Remember that era? There was a couple of years there where everybody was solarizing their houses and insulating their houses and building houses that faced south and putting and certain curtains and all these doodads and stuff. And a whole industry had been birthed because tax credits and deductions were available to people, to individuals who wanted to use solar energy in their homes and to companies that wanted to develop solar products. And Ronald Reagan stripped all of that stuff out when he came into office. His first official act of office was to take the solar panels that Jimmy Carter had put up on top of the White House down. And now Howard Dean is coming back and saying, we need to come back to this. And I say, amen. God bless him. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Hey, look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however, each month. You know,
I want to see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
man's good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
And they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. American taxpayers are subsidizing bridges, airway systems, and other infrastructure in Europe and elsewhere through corporate tax shelters that cost the U.S. Treasury billions of dollars. Now, that's just part of the story. The rest of the story is that the person who told us about this had to testify from behind a screen. Now, where are we at in America when a whistleblower on a corporation has to be treated the way that a mob informant was treated 20 years ago? What does this say about what's happening in our country? About how, and just the whole issue of whistleblowers. I mean, look at Joe Wilson getting trashed. Here, the DNC has come out with a little 30-second ad here about the leaks. Let me just share a piece of this with you. As soon as I pot it up.
It keeps getting worse. Scandals in the Bush White House. Now they illegally leak the identity of an American CIA agent, all to hide Bush administration deceptions about the war in Iraq.
I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors.
He's right about this one. It's time for an independent investigation and the truth.
And there you go. The DNC coming out and saying, hey, you know, it's... And they're going to be spending some money on this, promoting this, getting the message out. And is this administration violating the law and basic ethical standards in the way they treat both whistleblowers and prisoners? This is really a large issue. I'm going to get into this in some detail in the next hour. I think that this is one of the big issues that we're facing is how this is being handled, how this sort of thing is being handled. This administration is saying, basically, if you want to tell the truth about something, you know, that you may suffer severe consequences. Your family may go down in flames as a consequence of it. And we heard yesterday, Louise got a call yesterday from one of the people from the fellow who found the information in the National Archives about Bush's family being connected to the Nazis and fed it to the Associated Press. And he says he's got to have police protection around his house now. I mean, have we gone nuts in America? I think it's possible that we can still regain our sanity, but it's going to take a change in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle here on the IE America Radio Network.
But this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. After failing to attract large numbers of foreign peacekeepers in Iraq, the Pentagon is drawing up plans to rotate in as many as 30,000 more reservists early next year, despite growing worries in Congress about strains on the force. These troops would join 15,000 Army National Guard troops already in line to go into Iraq on a year-long rotation to replace U.S. troops now in Iraq. U.S. Marines may also be sent into Iraq by February to ease the burden on Army forces. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld refused to discuss how many more reservists might be needed next year, saying no final decisions had been made. But Rumsfeld raised the possibility that up to 10,000 troops for Iraq offered by Turkey might never go due to resistance by the Iraqi Governing Council, meaning that U.S. forces might be needed in their place. The Pentagon disclosed that more than a dozen American troops haven't returned to duty after getting a vacation from Iraq, but dismissed suggestions that there is any significant AWOL problem. 16 troops failed to show up at airports in Baltimore and Germany for return flights to the Persian Gulf region. None has been declared absent without leave as officials try to sort out the cases. To give troops some relief from long deployments in Iraq, the Pentagon started giving 2-week leaves in the longest R&R program since the Vietnam War. But in the first 5 days of return flights starting August 12th, 28 people didn't show up. It was later learned that 20 had permission or some other reason. The other 8 were unaccounted for, as were 8 who also missed flights in the past 5 days. North Korea rejected President Bush's offer of a written pledge not to attack in exchange for agreeing to scrap its nuclear program, saying it would settle for nothing less than a formal non-aggression treaty that would legally bind the United States not to launch a preemptive strike. Bush kept open an offer for a written pledge in which the U.S., China, Japan, South Korea, and Russia would assure that North Korea would not be attacked, but North Korean radio said the offer was a laughing matter not worth considering. More IE America Network news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A 25-year-old Berlin, Germany woman was so enraged over another Saturday night of boring television programs and dull reruns, she hurled her TV set out the window of her fifth-floor apartment. There was nothing decent on, so I just threw the thing out the window, the woman told Bild newspaper. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
There are
are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
When George W. was governor of our state, we Texans learned firsthand of a deep anti-democratic flaw in his makeup. He abhors dissent and is totally dismissive not only of dissenters, but also of the people's right to dissent. As governor, as presidential candidate, and now as president, Bush's unconscionable, and I think unconstitutional, disrespect of our fundamental right to question authority and confront power has surfaced again and again in an alarming Bush doctrine of contained dissent. What this amounts to is an imperious decision that any and all protesters must literally be corralled, kept in protest pens well beyond the sight and sound of His Eminence and of the media. In Texas, Governor Bush's security police suddenly swept down on a group of peaceful picketers who were on the public sidewalk in front of the governor's mansion, a sidewalk that historically has been the site of protest. At this time, George was launching his presidential run, and he simply didn't want these dissenters to his environmental policies getting between him and the TV cameras, so he had the state police move them to a designated protest zone in a faraway parking lot. At the Republican presidential nominating convention in Philadelphia in 2000, candidate Bush created a fenced-in, out-of-sight protest zone that would only hold a few hundred people at a time. And, as president, his autocratic games continue. For example, last year at the Columbia, South Carolina airport, a protester with a No War for Oil sign stood in an area where Bush supporters stood. The protester was ordered to move a half a mile away. He refused, so Bush's police arrested him. This is Jim Hightower saying, four groups have now sued the Secret Service for systematically shutting out the people's protest. To learn more, call the American Civil Liberties Union, 215-923-4357.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Can you imagine if somebody had committed a crime and they were to say to other people who had the ability to reveal that crime, well, I know you guys, you're not going to reveal this crime. You've never revealed a crime like this before. You're not going to tell anybody. I got nothing to worry about. You're not going to say anything. If George Bush said that to the press, that he had outed a CIA agent and he had nothing to worry about. Listen to the subtext. Listen to the subtext in this comment by our president.
How many sources have you had that's leaked information that you've exposed? Or...
So he's saying to the press, how many sources have you had that have leaked information that, in fact, let me start it over. And his English doesn't quite make sense, but here, we'll try it again.
How many sources have you had that's leaked information that you've exposed or have been exposed?
In other words, where you have exposed the leaker. How many leakers have you exposed, Bush is saying to the press?
Probably none. I mean, this town is a town full of people who like to leak information.
See, in other words, he's telling them that he has nothing to worry about. He's in good shape. He doesn't have to worry about the press exposing what he's been doing. And then he goes on to say, and then, of course, the question is, well, if the press isn't going to expose it, is the president?
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea. I'd like to.
Yeah, and he says, I'd like to, and then the most just disingenuous statement of all.
I want to know the truth.
Yeah, if he wants to know the truth, all he'd have to do is send out a memo to everybody on his staff saying, you tell me the truth right now. My guess is he already knows the truth. But the larger issue here is how do we deal with people who are whistleblowers like Joe Wilson was? How does this administration deal with them? How can they appropriately be dealt with? Is this guy who got on the airplane an example of a whistleblower, or is he mentally ill, or is he a criminal? In today's news, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a man tried to board a plane with a knife and a cutting tool on Tuesday, yesterday, but then was allowed onto his flight once the items were confiscated, authorities said. This was because they didn't have the time to contact the federal authorities. Airport police had little choice, but here, and the man told an airport officer the knife was in his bag because he was going on a diving trip, and the tool in his shoe was likely planted by friends. One of the officers there says he believed the man was trying to test airport security. So here we go, copycat crimes. I mean, this is the problem. If this kid actually thought that he was making America safer, why just pick airport security? What about port security? I mean, there's a thousand different ways the terrorists could attack us. I just have a hard time envisioning him as a patriot. I do easily envision him as a variation of the Hinckley kid. You know, the one whose brother or father was having lunch with George Bush's brother, Neil, out in Colorado at the time that he shot the president, Reagan, at the time, to get Jody Foster's attention. This is extreme attention-getting behavior. But, you know, who knows? Time will tell. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut has some thoughts on this, I suspect. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thank you for calling 1-800-TALK-YES, as they say.
Always my pleasure, Tom. You know, one of the things that they've actually started saying about Wilson is the fact that he's a kook and a flake and everything else. They've actually started the name-calling. Congressman Simmons, a former CIA spook himself, has been on the local talk radio shows saying, you know, don't pay attention to that man, Mr. Wilson, and everything. He's got a partisan agenda, and he's a wacko. They actually use the term wacko to try to smear this guy back, you know, and it's kind of But it just seems like a, you know, Wizard of Oz kind of thing. Don't pay attention to that man back there.
Well, this administration's strategy virtually from day one has been, if you don't like the message, smear the messenger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's, well, you know.
Personalize everything.
They kind of learned it from Clinton, too, with the old nuts and sluts routine, you know. If you don't like, you know, someone coming forth exposing what you have to say, then, you know, just smear them all to heck. And you certainly got enough outlets and willing dupes to go along with it.
Yeah, you're right. Although it didn't work particularly well for Bill Clinton. But these guys seem to be getting away with it. It's
really, I would hope so. It's I mean, I hope that it doesn't get away with it. We can't go back, you know, again, just arguing today with conservatives about, you know, trying to spin that things are going well in Iraq as opposed to where are the weapons. Where's Saddam Hussein? Where's Osama bin Laden? All those kind of basic one-on-one kind of questions that certainly haven't been asked Instead,
well,
and
even the focus on Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden is part of this personalizing strategy that this administration has. We need a bad guy. You know, in screenwriting, they teach you that the first rule of screenwriting is that your good guy can only be as good as your bad guy is bad. Superman had to have Lex Luthor. If Lex Luthor wasn't there, a comic, you know, a drama about a guy who had all these superpowers would be incredibly boring because he could do anything he wanted.
Oh, that's,
so you've got to have a bad guy that is as bad as the good guy wants to be good. And so you set up incredibly bad guys, and it makes you appear incredibly good as you take them on.
Oh, absolutely. A couple of other things real quickly. You're talking about mental health funding, which is, and even the whole issue is always that kind of dirty little secret that the United States doesn't really want to deal with, and kind of it's, you know, the...
Well, we were doing a pretty decent job, Tim, until Ronald Reagan came along. I mean, we didn't have...
Oh, absolutely, but I mean, you know, now we're running around, you know, with bandages. My wife is a manager of a psych unit, and the state of Connecticut, which is considered one of the most richest states in the country, by the way, you know, laid off thousands of healthcare workers in the state, and a couple hundred of them were the people who are kind of the middle part that actually, once someone is out of a psych unit and trying to stabilize their existence back in the community, make sure that they take care of their meds and they have, you know, a healthy existence, kind of follows up on that stuff. And we actually, you know, we laid off all those people who are going out in the field and doing that stuff. So what happened, of course, is, you know, these people inevitably end up back into the expensive hospitals, the emergency rooms, all that stuff, and, you know, trying to save pennies and costing you dollars more.
Yeah.
That kind of mentality.
And when they end up in prison, you know, it's $50,000 a year to take care of a prisoner.
Absolutely. And, you know, God forbid, we seem to be having a lot of national people who are, I'm kind of, in a backward way, I don't mean the man ill, but, you know, this whole Rush Limbaugh thing with the fact that people are out there, you know, self-medicating themselves all across this country, maybe people will start talking about this in a more serious manner as far as funding.
Yeah, I wrote an op-ed about that for CommonDreams.org in which I suggested that, you know, this might be, Rush Limbaugh may teach the conservatives a lesson was the headline. Tim, I was, for 5 years back in the late 70s, early 80s, I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely abused children and emotionally disturbed kids. And we were the edge of the mental health community. I mean, if the kids failed in our program, they went into the state mental hospital. And I'm president of the board of directors. It's the New England Salem Children's Trust in New Hampshire, in Romney, New Hampshire. And now 25 years later. And it just is amazing to me how unwilling the state of New Hampshire, the federal government, through the various programs that are available, and local communities, for that matter, are unwilling to fund mental health programs. Well, anyhow, this brings me back to this original question, Tim. Do you think that this kid who, what's his name, Nathaniel Heatwall, a 20-year-old who smuggled all this stuff onto airplanes, do you think that he... I've been amazed. I've had two people whose opinions I truly respect say to me, I think the guy's a patriot. And I thought either A, you know, he's a small-time criminal. He's committed a crime that he knew was a crime. Or he's mentally ill. What do you think?
Could I pose a third? Can I...
Sure.
Call him somebody who probably, for the lack of a better term, kind of a MTV jackass program. There's a lot of people out there who are desperately seeking some sort of attention to their causes and will pull these kinds of stunts when they realize that, you know, it's almost a desperate kind of attention grabber to try to do these things. I think it's the middle ground. I think he might have had some legitimate concerns and causes, but to do this kind of, you know, stunt like this, you know, it's got to be personally incredibly irresponsible. But how does that really further his agenda and make him instead look like a nut himself?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Do you think that he has enhanced security in the United States?
Oh, absolutely not, because of the fact that the average airport is, you know, we've lulled ourselves back to sleep. You know, we're still searching, unfortunately, the little old ladies who, you know, the white little old ladies who have no chances to be politically correct. You know, we're going to search them as well as the Arab, kind of people. And I'm not sure at all. I mean, the ports, all of these kinds of things, we certainly don't have the resources to do that. I mean, they're already talking about laying off more workers.
Yeah, and keep in mind, by the way, that
at the machines.
Yeah.
So,
but
we've lulled ourselves back into sleep, thinking it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, when we talk about the white little old ladies, though, keep in mind Tim McVeigh was not one of those Arab-looking guys.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, he could have just as easily have grabbed an airplane as he did although he didn't seem to be into suicide. But, you know, you never know. It's a possibility. But I do think that yeah, I fly a lot, and it just boggles my mind the way that, you know, little old ladies and little kids get the thorough search. But then I suppose you never know when one of them, you know, they may be. You could make the argument, and in fact they do in many foreign countries, they particularly do when you fly in and out of Israel, that those people are the ones that are targeted by people who want to give them a package to take to a friend in the other country, and it turns out the package is a bomb, and they're carrying stuff they don't realize that they're carrying.
But the buses and the trains and the ferries, I mean, we had somebody, you know, probably asleep or whatever. The potential is there. We can't put a bubble over the entire, you know, world and all that sort of stuff, so I guess it goes back to the original thing. It's probably time to quit making the entire Arab world mad at us and say this is a Christian versus Muslim war, like a certain wacko general. You know, so perhaps, you know, it's time to tone things down.
Oh, that was so bad. Yeah, I agree, Tim. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Some real issues here in the United States. This is more than just, you know, is this kid a criminal or a patriot? How are we dealing with whistleblowers in general in the United States? I have some amazing information for you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. We'll be right back.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free, and they are so good. You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween. Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood. And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
a... more tissues.
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red 90?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
It
and
is Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Kodak in Richmond, Virginia is on the line. Kodak, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, what's up?
Yes, great show again today, Tom.
Thank you. Are you driving through Richmond?
Actually, now I'm just on the north of Richmond, town of Fredericksburg.
Oh, yeah. Where are you heading to?
I'm going down to the Charleston, South Carolina Air Force Base there with some supplies for our troops. So I guess I'm doing my patriotic duty.
There you go. Do you notice, I mean, you drive a truck, and I'm assuming, is it a container kind of truck, or is it the kind that you load separately?
Actually, I drive the flatbed type of truck.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you ever encounter, are you ever taking imported goods and, you know, stuff going from or to airplanes or ships?
Yes. Matter of fact, we do a lot of the military hauling. A lot of it is done by flatbed. I move a lot of the equipment on these howitzers.
So these are the great big long 18-wheeler flatbeds.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And what's your sense of security?
That's one of those things that is a redundant statement because, us to be secure, it won't come in the form of policy regarding what we can do in order to make facilities or the public safe at large. Because we are just a free country, and this has been our way of life for so long that our whole structure is just so wide open. There are just so many targets that could just be so damaging to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that saying that, you know, pouring money into this agency is going to bring about a safer nation is ridiculous. And it was proven by this guy's act here with the airport security. When I'm not driving this truck, when I do take time off, I fly because, you know, after doing all this driving, naturally, I want to get where I want to in a hurry. And if you just look around, there's all types of gaps in the security. And look at the report that just recently come out, which a lot of us weren't aware of, was the fact that most of the cargo that is shipped, what small package cargo as it's called, that is shipped throughout the world is done on the U.S. fleet, air fleet. And none of this is scanned. So that's a whole other area of negligence that is being overlooked.
And so do you think this guy should be prosecuted, should be institutionalized, or should be congratulated?
Well, here's the thing about this type of situation. And it is a black and white issue. that there are laws, specific laws, that are here for whatever the reason, in this case, our protection, and also from creating travesty of the system. Because what I understand about the passive resistance movement is that the act in which you do must bring attention to your cause, but it has to be done in such a manner that it does not defame or take away from your point that you're trying to do. I mean, there were many more ways that he could have utilized in order to get his point across. He didn't actually have to use box cutters. He could have used water. He could have just used a note and put it in these places. So
he could have just had a little piece of metal.
Right. So I really think that, yes, he needs, I don't necessarily think jail time or anything like that, but the punitive damage, let him just go through the legal system. That's enough. If he has to support those bills from that, and yes, it does bring attention to him.
Good point, Coda Ack, and thank you. You know, Nancy Pelosi has suggested he should do community service. That's some of the folks on our message board are talking about that. I think we're going to hear from one in a minute. Doug in Santa Fe, hold the line. Whistle in Alabama, hang on. We'll get to your calls right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
An expert on fresh water urges a soft path to head off hard choices over this vital resource. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. We can no longer afford to waste our fresh water, and there's a lot we can do to conserve it. That's the opinion of Peter Glick, president of the Pacific Institute in Oakland, California, and the author of a biennial report on the world's water resources. Glick says we need to rethink the way we use fresh water.
What we need now is really a soft path, a more integrated approach that relies on infrastructure, hard physical things, but it also relies on the proper application of economics, bringing communities into decision-making about water policy, and in particular, it relies on rethinking water use and efficiency.
Glick says efficiency has been the missing ingredient.
Much of our water use is inefficient. We waste much of the water that we use. And if we were to refocus on efficiency and conservation, there's a tremendous amount of water out there that we're using inefficiently that could free up an enormous amount of water for other uses.
Agriculture is by far the biggest water consumer. Glick says farmers need to become more efficient with irrigation, and he says they should plant crops more in tune with the region's water supply.
We spend a lot of water right now on some pretty inefficient, low-valued crops like rice and cotton and alfalfa and irrigated pasture. There's no reason why California should be a leading dairy state rather than Wisconsin, for example, where it rains much more. We spend a lot of water here in California to grow alfalfa and irrigated pasture. That's a very inefficient use of our water.
Glick says a smarter approach could save water for other needs, including nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the legal huddle. where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Half the people you see these days are talking on cell phones, driving off the road and bumping into doors. People used to spend quite a bit of time alone. I guess nobody's alone anymore.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Senator Charles Grassley has something to say about whistleblowers. Now, he wasn't talking about this kid who dropped the airplane box cutters in these airplanes. The box cutters in the airplanes. But I think this was more along the lines of inspired by Joe Wilson. But just the whole issue of whistleblowers, here's what Charles Grassley had to say.
There's three examples of probably hundreds I ought to be able to give you that whistleblowers have been key, whether it's been uncovering $700 toilet seats at the Defense Department, bad science and people wrongfully being convicted because of bad science at the FBI laboratory, or the failure to prosecute millions of dollars of Medicare fraud. Because the fact is that documents alone will not give adequate information about what's going on in the bureaucracy, as important as those documents are.
Right.
Only whistleblowers can explain beyond the documents why something is wrong and provide best evidence to prove it. Then we can fix the problem. That's our job. And hold miscreants responsible.
So, was Nathaniel Heatwool... And even the larger issue than this is, you know, how should we be dealing with whistleblowers in the United States? The main place where whistleblowers usually find themselves, if they're federal employees, is in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. And 83 out of 84 times, that court has ruled against whistleblowers when they have tried to seek protection under the laws designed to protect whistleblowers. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Doug in Santa Fe has some thoughts on this. Doug, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. The whole issue, the guy who dropped off the box in the restroom, one of the things ABC did when the news first broke was also tie in the college that he goes to. And I think that end of the story has been dropped.
Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Right.
What's the tie-in there?
Well, it's just, you know, it's a kind of a progressive act on your cause kind of college, and that's what.
Oh, he has liberal professors. Is that it?
Well, no, I'm totally in agreement with what. Well, not necessarily what he did, but in the fact that he acted on something. He saw a problem, and he did what he felt necessary to make it a larger issue amongst the public. So I don't think he should be prosecuted. I kind of go along with one of the, I think it was a senator that came out a little while ago and said that he should actually do community service with the Department of Transportation.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi. But hang on just a second here, Doug. You've got this guy who yesterday was flying from Erie, Pennsylvania to Fort Myers, Florida. He was trying to smuggle a knife and a cutting tool on board an airplane. It looks like he was saying, hey, I'll get some PR for this. This could be a good thing. Maybe I'll get a book deal. Maybe I'll get on national television. Incidents. Is this going to become a real mess? Are we going to have a whole, you know, spate of people who are trying to get on airplanes with box cutters, and as a result, it slows down the system, and you know, it could cause. I don't think it'll cause security problems, but you know, it's got to be a PETA here for these people.
Well, one of the things that happened after September 11th for the first year is almost every day, well, at least once or twice a month, the airline industry, one of the airports, got shut down. And it seems in this last year that they've totally relaxed it. I haven't heard once of an airport getting shut down. So the issue is going to start popping up a little bit more due to what this guy has done. It might help us out in the long run, I feel. But I think it was something that needed to be brought to a larger group of the country. It needed to be brought back into the public eye again.
So you think that this is a real problem that, that we weren't aware of, that, that people actually thought that airports were secure?
Well, I'm ex-military, and frankly, when I was in Panama training at Fort Sherman, we were able to steal, my unit was able to steal the commanding general's Jeep to run errands. So, I mean, even in the military, security is somewhat of a joke. It's kind of a oxymoron.
Well, you're I am convinced that you're never going to be able to stop somebody who's really determined, I mean, as Israel is demonstrating, who's really determined that they're out to get you. And the best way to prevent terrorism is to as the liberals used to say, is to prevent the causes of it.
I think people just need to wake up. That's the only way to prevent half the things that are going on in the world is for people to get off their duff, stop being complacent, and steeped in their apathy, and actually start paying attention to what's going on around them.
Okay. Amen. Doug, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good point. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Whistle in Alabama's online. Is this Whistle from the chat room?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Whistle, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I love your show. I'd be in the chat
Thank
room
you.
Now, but I'm so busy at work, I can't monitor that and work at the same time. So, but I had to call in. The kid went to a Quaker college, and they have a history of doing things that not necessarily agree with what our government's doing at the time.
Yeah, but isn't civil disobedience where you confront oppression? You confront somebody who is essentially who is doing something illegal, and you confront them in a passive way. I think of civil rights protesters sitting down in the street when they came up to herd them off, or people standing in front of the School of the Americas down in Georgia. They did there were some who were proactive who defaced it with blood and things, but generally isn't civil disobedience really not doing something, not going along?
The Quakers took in and worked the Underground Railroad. That was a very active thing for them to do. This kid let them know that he was going to do this, and they didn't improve their actions any to stop him. So, I don't know. Is he a patriot or is he a nut? I think maybe sometimes patriots are nuts.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean,
that's a good point.
I thank him for doing what he did. I think if it'll make flying safer, that's a good thing.
Okay. All righty. Thank you, Whistle.
You're
welcome.
Appreciate
your comments and appreciate your call. Here we've got this guy now who has testified about this. There's this scam going on. It's just an incredible scam. A story from Reuters it's on all the wire services. It's on all, in all your local newspapers, where basically corporations have set up this deal. So the largest corporations in America. I mean, they say this is the banks, the Fortune 500 companies. And what they do is they go to foreign countries and say, hey, you got a nice bridge there. Why don't you give me title to that bridge and I'll lease it back to you. And then when we're all done over the course of the lease, say over a 10-year period or 5-year period or whatever, when we're all done, I'll give you back the bridge. And the corporation... And it says you give it to me for $1,000 and I'll lease it to you for $900. So you actually get $100 from me. So the foreign foreign country makes a little bit of a profit, and the company that now owns the bridge and is leasing it back to the people who owned it before gets to depreciate it to take a tax deduction for it on their balance sheet. The depreciation would end up on the P&L, and by lowering their profits, they pay less taxes, and the amount of fewer taxes that they pay is much greater than the small little penny that they're giving the people that they're leasing the bridge from. So it's a scam, and it turns out that it's a scam that is costing our government billions of dollars. And in fact, much of the old and new infrastructure throughout Europe has been leased to and leased back from American corporations, according to this guy who testified before Congress. And U.S. cities are now doing the same, with the subway systems of Boston, Chicago, and Washington having been leased to U.S. corporations. Now, here's what's outrageous. This guy, in order to talk about this, this whistleblower from within corporate America, a former leasing industry executive, had to testify from behind a screen with a voice scrambler. We are treating whistleblowers like they are criminals, or like they are, you know, like they're in the witness protection program, like they're from the mafia or something. What does this say for America? David in Santa Fe has some thoughts on this. Our number, by the way, is 1-800-TALK-YES, if you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-825-5937. David, what's your opinion on this?
Well, you know, I think you need to consider that I don't think the kid's a wacko or crazy. I think that he doesn't have a lot of experience. Actually, I was in support of what he did until you brought up the whole copycat thing. And then I thought, oh, wow, yeah, the copycat thing, that was probably a dumb thing to do. He probably wasn't thinking about that. He was probably thinking that, you know, he saw the gaps in security and said, well, I will show them where the gaps are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lord knows he used email and everything else. I think that, you know, he probably just didn't think it through far enough. But I think the bottom line here is, you know, what I've been thinking for the last couple of years is, you know, I think we all need, as American citizens, we need to remember that I don't think the Congress has changed the last line of the national anthem to go, or the land of the watched and the home of the scared.
Right.
You got to be brave in order to be free. Personally, I'm brave enough to be free. I'm not scared and want the police or whoever else it is to watch over me so that I'll be safe.
That is such a great line, David. I mean, that there's your bumper sticker. I'm brave enough to be free, Mr. Ashcroft.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
I'm brave enough to be free. You know, I don't expect at the next football game the national anthem to be sung or the land of the watched and the home of the scared.
Right. Brilliant. Well said, David. Thank you. I appreciate your call. Well, excellent. We have an email here from Greg. He says, this person is not a hero, but he certainly may be a patriot. We do not know that he was the messenger. In my sixth decade, I probably wouldn't be so politically naive as to sign my name to an email. To me, this young man appears thus far to be where you and I were in the 60s when we were 20 years old. I think he sees hypocrisy run amok, and his 20-year-old mind thought this was effective. You know, you may be right. I first of all, I didn't realize that he went to a Quaker college where civil disobedience was a big part of their instruction. That dramatically changes my perspective on him and his behavior. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Paul in South Carolina has some thoughts on the topic. Paul, welcome to the program.
I just wanted to make a couple comments on that kid.
Sure.
First of all, I heard that he did a first school project. That was one thing that I had heard. And also about the other people, like the copycats or whatever coming across, I think mm-hmm. that they should be persecuted as if it was a crime, but the I mean, because they're not necessarily whistleblowers, if you think about it.
Yeah, you think he's a whistleblower.
Yeah, he's the one that's a whistleblower. So, anyway, those are my comments.
Okay, great. Paul, thank you for the call. Yeah. One person exposed the vulnerability in U.S. nuclear laboratories, a whistleblower. He can't regain security clearance to regain his career. He's lost his ability to make a living. Another blew the whistle inside the FAA on lax airline security. That was a couple of years ago. Now his job has been reduced to doing menial tasks. Many federal whistleblowers are having their careers destroyed because of a loophole in the law designed to protect them. And this is people who have security clearances, who have to have a security clearance in order to do their job. If their security clearances are revoked, the federal agency that investigates their case cannot restore those clearances. So the people that clear them can't clear them.
Security clearances are frequently revoked on whistleblowers. Federal appeals courts are their only chance of restoring it, and they almost always rule against them. 83 out of the last 84 cases. And if a whistleblower can't regain security clearance, their careers are ruined. Many whistleblowers have said that the system is so rigged against them that they wouldn't do it again. And back in the 1990s, Congress tried to close a loophole. But the Department of Justice so strongly objected, that was Janet Reno's Department of Justice back then, that they were unsuccessful in doing it. One whistleblower spent $50,000 and 5 years to get 2 minutes in court and was told that she didn't have a case. We need new legislation around this. It's just you know, very clearly, we have a situation here where we need legislation that explicitly, specifically, without, you know, without any ambiguity, offers protection to whistleblowers who are acting in the public interest, particularly those who are federal employees. Now, typically, whistleblowers are not like this Nathaniel Heatwall, who got on this airplane, or on these airplanes. They're employees who have inside information. They have access to inside information. And what's happened is that the Federal Appeals Court, the U.S. Circuit Court, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, has created a test for whether somebody's a real whistleblower or not that's almost impossible to pass. They must be the first one to talk about a fraud. You must find out about it outside of the function of their job. Now, get that? It can't be something that you learn about because of your job, which wipes out most whistleblowers or potential whistleblowers right there. Third, it must be irrefragable. The presumption the public officers perform their duties correctly, fairly, in good faith, in accordance with the law. This presumption stands unless there is irrefragable proof. In other words, uncontestable, indeniable. Roberta in Connecticut has some thoughts on this. Roberta, we've got to go to a break here in about 15 seconds. If you can just hold on, I'll pick you up on the other side of the commercial, and we'll give you a chance to get your whole thought out there. But what we need to do is break the Federal Circuit Court's monopoly on whistleblower cases so that people can file asking for protection as a whistleblower in any appeals court in the country, and change the irrefragable threshold to simply credible evidence. If we did that, democracy would be served. We would all be safer. It would right across the board. This is Tom Hartman, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost
51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pants sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, right. Well, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Molloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Molloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we have 2 calls on the line, and we've only got about 3 minutes here, so we're going to take them real quickly. Roberta in Connecticut has some thoughts on whistleblowers. Roberta, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, and real quick. Now, my question is, if copycats continue to successfully plant box cutters and such, why should we, the American public, the flyers, not the people who enforce the law, but why should we care why they did it? The point is, if they continue to be successful, airport security is still lousy. It's not working.
Yeah. Well, it never will. It's not possible to be 100% accurate. The most effective form of airport security, in my opinion, is what they do in Israel, which is psychographic screening. They ask you questions, and they watch you to give the answers, and they get really personal questions. Who did you stay with? What were you doing? Why are you here? Things like that. And that's where they catch people. And, because the machinery is really never gonna do it as well. And do we want to go into that kind of security in the United States? Frankly, I have some doubts about that. Roberta, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Bruce in Columbus, Ohio, your thoughts on this?
Tom, I just wanted to go off topic for just a little bit to get back to the big picture. Bush 43 has done severe damage to our foreign policy, and we're kind of hated throughout the world. I'm becoming a xenophobe. I'd love to know what your listeners and you feel about isolationism. That would solve all our problems.
Well, yeah, and define isolationism. Isolationism is in what context?
Just closing up our borders and quit worrying about the rest of the world. Nobody wants our help. Why are we doing it?
The old Monroe Doctrine kind of thing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Pardon? I know there's holes in it. I wouldn't know what to do about Israel and some of the other countries that do need our support, but we're not... nobody wants our help.
Yeah, well, you know, the cons say, well, you know, you shouldn't help people because you're just perpetuating dependency. So maybe the theory that they apply to people on welfare should be applied to every other nation in the world. I personally don't think so. I think we are part of the world in which we live, and I don't think that complete isolation is either possible or appropriate or healthy. I do think that appropriate engagement is a good idea, and we've done that in the past, and we're not doing it right now. You're right. This administration has really damaged our standing in the world. Thank you, Bruce, for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta, Georgia. Engineered by Steph Stryker and Char Jones in Detroit. Thank you very much for joining us today and tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.